grandparents must show their grandchildren what godliness looks like. The power of example, so much more powerful than anything I can ever say.
Elizabeth Elliot says, "It takes a steadfast heart to allow the Lord to let His will be done in us. I want His will with all my heart. Lord, do anything you want with me, at any cost. Work your will in me." Thank you for joining us for another challenge from Elizabeth Elliot.
Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will direct your paths. This is your friend Elizabeth Elliot talking with you again today about living a life worthy of the Lord. I gave you a rather delightful quotation from the life of Elizabeth Prentice, a woman who lived about 100 years ago and had servants, as most people did in the middle class in those days, and she told about all the blunders that had taken place in a dinner that she had put on for very important people. And I didn't have time to read all of them, so now I'll give you blunder the eighth. It was some kind of biscuit glacé that was the dessert, apparently, and it was stuffed, she says, with hideous orange peel. But delight the first. In other words, it wasn't all blunders. There was at least one thing that was a redeeming feature of the whole thing, a delicious dessert of farina smothered in custard. Can you imagine serving farina, which is really cream of wheat, smothered in custard for dessert? But she liked it. Blunder the ninth. No hot milk for the coffee. Delay in scalding it, and at last serving it in a huge, cracked pitcher. Blunder the tenth. Bananas, grapes, apples, and oranges forgotten at the right moment and passed after the coffee and, of course, declined. But hearing that Miss H.V. was fond of bananas, I seized the fruit basket and poured its contents into one napkin and a lot of chocolate cake into another and sent them to the young princesses in the parsonage, who are no doubt dying of indigestion this morning. This was all in a letter that she had written to a friend of hers. Now, what's it got to do with living a life worthy of the Lord? Even if you happen to be a wealthy pastor's wife in New York, putting on a fancy dinner with servants who help, there are trials and tribulations. They may not seem very big compared to the ones that you might be suffering at this moment, but it does require turning to the Lord, seeking His meaning in that. Actually, this biography of Elizabeth Prentice is filled with more suffering than I think I have ever read about in a single life, except perhaps the life of Adoniram Judson of Burma. I think there must be at least 50 to 75 deaths described in this biography. People who were close to her. She lost, I've forgotten how many children. And here's another bit that just tells about a change in her circumstances that she found very difficult. Her return from Dorset, Vermont, brought a new order of life. The transfer of her husband to a theological chair was almost as great a change to her as to him. In ceasing to be a pastor's wife, she gave up a position which for more than a quarter of a century had been to her a spring of constant joy, and which, notwithstanding its cares, she regarded as one of the most favored on earth. I hope there are some pastors' wives listening today who can see their job as being one of the most favored on earth. She had always found it a spring of constant joy to be in a position to help so many different kinds of people. While in the parsonage, too, she was in the midst of her friends. The removal to 61st Street, which is uptown in Manhattan, she had lived downtown, left the most of them at a distance. And distance in New York is no slight hindrance to the full enjoyment of social intimacy and fellowship. Remember now that this was written about 100 years ago when uptown in New York was practically out in the country. And it goes without saying that there were no subways or taxis or buses. Several weeks after the return to town were devoted to the congenial task of fitting up and adorning the new home. Then, for the first time in many years, she found herself at leisure, and one of its earliest fruits was a selection of stray religious verses for publication, which, however, soon gave way to a volume of her own. The sharp trials and suffering of the previous years showed their effect in deepened spiritual convictions, humility, and tenderness of feeling, but not in repressing her natural playfulness. And at times her spirits were still buoyant with fun and laughter. An extract from a letter to her youngest daughter, who with her sister was on a visit at Portland, will give you a glimpse of this gay mood. Such mishaps, as she recounts, are liable to occur in the best regulated households, especially in a change of servants. But they were rare in her experience, and so the more amused her. And then followed this catalog of these 10 blunders at the dinner. Trivialities, aren't they? And yet it is very often in the small things that we find ourselves least able to turn to God. Paul prayed for the Colossian Christians, "We are asking God that you may see things from His point of view by being given spiritual insight and understanding." Are you learning to look at everything in your life from God's point of view? I have found it wonderfully peace-giving and faith-strengthening when I get a bad piece of news or a disturbing letter or anything at all that would be likely to throw me into what I would call a funk, to just sort of take that thing in my hands, as it were, and place it in the light of Christ and just say, "Lord, help me to look at this the way you do." That really helps. And then when we look at the life of Jesus, because he was a man, he was human, he was limited in space and time and strength. He was a man who ate and drank and slept and walked and was tempted and tired, a man who needed to pray, a man who had to deal with all sorts of difficult people, and he had nowhere to call home. Remember that? Now take your present piece of life and put it alongside Jesus and ask God to help you to look at it with his eyes, in his light, from his perspective. I think you'll find it makes a very big difference. John 16:33 says, "In me you may find peace. In the world you will find tribulation." Think of the contrast there. In me, peace. In the world, trouble. So you see that even though we live here in the world where trouble is guaranteed, we can live in the world in Christ. And in Christ, we can find peace. It is possible, it is absolutely possible for us to live a life worthy of the Lord. I happen to be the kind of person who's prone to leap to conclusions. God is teaching me to stop, to postpone my judgment, to ask for spiritual insight and understanding. You who are rearing children, you fathers and mothers, especially I want to remind you how important it is not to leap to conclusions that your child is a hopeless case, or your child is just a rotten kid, or that he's a bum and he's gone off the deep end. Stop. Suspend your judgment. Ask for spiritual insight to understand what this child is doing, understand why he's doing what he's doing, or why he's not doing what he should be doing. Understanding, if he's having trouble at school, how my heart goes out to you who have high school kids. Because I have a high school grandchild. My oldest grandchild, Walter, is in high school in Mission Viejo, California. Not an easy place for a Christian child to live a life worthy of the Lord. I pray every day that God will keep him from the powers of evil, that God will sustain him. And when I visit him in California, I see sometimes that he has, for example, not exactly the haircut that his grandmother would choose. What am I supposed to do about that? Nothing. The answer is nothing, except to pray. If I think it's something that ought to be prayed about, then of course I can always talk to God about it. But I don't need to mention it to my daughter, let alone to her son. Ask God for spiritual insight. Do I really know what these children are thinking? I ask my grandson Jim, who's 8 years old, if he thinks very much about God. And he looked at me with great solemnity and he said, yes. I can remember my own spiritual struggles as a child. I think Christian parents should expect piety in their children. Believe that God does speak to them. Hold them up to God. Pray that they may be true soldiers and faithful followers. I taught Valerie when she was about 2 years old to pray every night when she went to bed, help me to love you and obey you and follow you and be your little lamb. You and I must walk worthy of the Lord in order to show them how. Grandparents must show their grandchildren what godliness looks like. The power of example, so much more powerful than anything I can ever say. You've seen your child put on the mother's shoes or the father's shoes. It's kind of awesome when you think about it. They want to walk in your steps. A child walking in his father's footsteps in the snow. Colleen, my little 6-year-old granddaughter, gazing soberly at me as I fixed my hair and my face. Suddenly I realized as I looked in the mirror that those big blue eyes were taking in everything. Think of Jesus' childhood. Think of his teenage. Think of his adulthood. We can learn as we watch and ponder and contemplate what it means to walk worthy of the Lord. Does this spur you to a deeper love, to a stronger commitment, the thought of those little eyes watching you?
As Elizabeth has said, anything if offered to God can and will become your gateway to joy. Elizabeth Elliott has been sharing timeless truth with ladies for many years, drawing insight from her Bible study and her experiences as a wife, mother, and missionary. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network, Charlotte, North Carolina.